record on this computer. All right. Hello, I'm Alex Vera, and it is August 2nd, 2022, and I am here with Crystal Dillard, who is in Philadelphia, I believe. I should have checked.
Yes.
Philadelphia, and is the co-director.
Yes. Yes, I'm the co-director of Natural Creativity Center, which is a self-directed education center that serves an area of the city called Germantown.
Nice. This interview is being conducted over Zoom. I'm in my apartment in Manhattan. Crystal, can you set the scene? So you're in Philadelphia, and where are you?
I'm in Philadelphia in my house. In the on the third floor.
Third floor with plants behind you and a beautiful painting.
Yes, the peace room. This is my peace room.
I love that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so Crystal, your last interview was last fall before the first pre-post COVID year of school. A lot probably happened. So thinking you as a bird looking over at the landscape that is that year, can you tell us what happened? What was your experience?
There's so much to say. The first thing is I think of it chronologically, and we were setting up, preparing for the year, of course, not fully knowing what was going to happen with COVID and, our families. We had families the year prior who hadn't felt comfortable coming back yet. So we weren't sure if that would continue. Our program the year before had adjusted to COVID by being fully outdoors. Essentially, we turned into a forest school type of model, which included winter. I mean, every season outside. And we had been in pods of young people based on age group in three different locations. With our staff split between those locations, which was obviously not what our model was before, but it's what we adjusted to. So the beginning of the year found us still outdoors, but working towards going indoors. We had actually leased a new space and had started work on turning that space into a more long-term home for ourselves. So there was actual construction happening in the building this time last year. So our plan was to start outdoors in the fall and then go in by winter time, because winter was sort of the factor for some people of I don't know if I can make it through another winter outdoors as they had the year before. So we felt good as long as we could be indoors. With that beginning of the year, this was what I think was our first wave of more mandates happening around people being vaccinated before coming back to work, or, it wasn't yet young people, of course, because those hadn't been approved, but it was lots of environments, especially school environments, were requiring staff. And so, we had to make a decision about whether we were going to require staff, which was a major decision for an environment like us, because, people who choose self-directed education, people who even choose to work within self-directed education, are people who are purposely choosing not to be in systems. And that can, that goes down to healthcare for some people, depending on where they are, which means that we've always had anti-vaxxers as part of in our world. So of course we knew, making that. So we had just hired on two new staff members before we started, a week before we started. We had two staff members who had been there almost the longest decide that they were not willing to either vaccinate or take what we were asking for, I think was weekly tests. So they were not going to vaccinate or take tests. And if that meant they couldn't work with us, then they would accept that. So yeah, we had to work with an attorney to determine, even when we were creating our policy, what we could do. And so we knew that our policy was sound. We knew that it was what our families would require in order for them to feel safe. And those two staff members who, again, were like staples in our community, in a small community of like a staff of six, I think we were at the time, we lost those two people. We had grown to a staff of eight because of the new people. So they left, and that was a controversial start to our year. You know, there were families who didn't agree with that decision, and whispers, and also people who, like, when we were straight about the reason, you know, were happy that we made that decision, even if it meant these people who were dear to them left. So that was sort of the what we started with. And, you know, we achieved our goal of having the building complete by the winter. And actually, like, late fall, we were done with the building, and we had to take a couple of weeks off just to give our staff from program to give our staff time to fully move into the building, which was unexpected and, you know, required more flexibility on families' parts. But, you know, we found ways of getting them to partner with each other for childcare and for, you know, like them to also make the best of that time by keeping young people connected. And then we, you know, had this sort of grand opening in the middle of the year, and it was wonderful. I mean, it was delightful to be indoors again. Of course, everyone was masked. We did our best around social distancing, especially around food, you know, so we would only have like a certain amount of people who could eat per table. And those were the only places that were unmasked. Yeah, it was like living in between being an educator and being a police officer, which we had already been, because even outdoors, you know, we faced that for a full year. So, so that was an introduction. And overall, it went really well. Like, people were just really happy to be together. Through the year, we had waves of COVID. We never had any like massive outbreaks, but we did have, you know, people who would become exposed or couldn't come to work. We had family members who were exposed and a young person would be out. We had young people and family members who had COVID, and, you know, that would require being out. So like all those things happened. And I guess what we learned is like all those things happened and the world didn't end. And like, thankfully no one, you know, as compared to where we were with COVID a year before, there were no real serious cases, and, you know, everyone has healed up. So that was our year. And so outside of the COVID factor of that, the year itself, I think ended on a high note, with more stability than we had had all that, like, in the last 2 years. It finally felt like something kind of came together, even in terms of the new staff members who hadn't seen a normal year and weren't quite sure who or what we were, because we hadn't been our typical model all that time. So by the end of the year, it felt something like normal. And yeah, that's what our year was like.
That's hopeful.
Yeah. Yeah.
What does normal look like?
I think normal for us is more about our model. So normal is everyone all together, and us being like, again, like a self-directed center. Imagine a space with four-year-olds to 17-year-olds all intermixing and engaging in all kinds of really interesting things. Those things could not happen when we were outdoors and when we were separate. So the normal really is the coming together part of it, and then like access to specific tools. So we have a wood shop, we have an art room, we have a makerspace, we have these certain things that are about creativity and are sort of at the core of who we are that we did not have access to when we were outdoors. And I think we just adjusted and became something else, which is fine. And I think we are still like looking to be both. And even once we were in the building, we would have full days that we would all go out and return back to the park system. And we had a space that we rented that was part of the park system. And so we were still like finding ways to do that because it has become a part of our identity. Like there are certain things that will never go back. Like I think nature will more so be a part of who we are at the core in a way that it wasn't before. And I think the age group, the focus on age group, whereas there was like a everyone all together and even our group times were all together, full ages, we found value in us having age bands, you know, 4 through 9 years old and 10 through 12 and 13 to 18. We found value in those, in keeping certain things community within those age bands, and that has remained the same. So that's actually like a change. So there's certain ways that we changed and our model changed and grew because of our experience outdoors and because of COVID. And then there are certain things that are the norm, such as all being together in a similar space and having access to our tools and being able to do staff development, you know, all together and not on Zoom. Meeting with families in person and not on Zoom. All those things are the normal parts that I think we were able to return to.
Your school sounds so cool and important. It is interesting hearing that it's more, the age. Can you talk more about the value of the age group?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of opposite of what you guys normally do all the time with the mix. Mm-hmm. Like, what value did you find in it? Because that's like traditional education.
True. I think the value that we saw in it, there's several. Like one of the values of it is that staff gets to become more specialized in a developmental area. So there's real value to knowing what 4 through 8 year olds are like, because you're with them more. And so it's easier to know how to develop relationships with young people that age and to become familiar with certain developmental milestones that are happening. So one of it is like the ability to specialize with staff. Another thing is like the relationship building, even with staff, when you're focused on everyone. And then we always had a partnership model that was like the staff and the young person, like one staff member to a young person, and that was always there. But when that's then put into a container of a smaller group, there's even more intimacy and development of relationship that can happen between the staff members and a certain group of young people. So that is a benefit of it. And then also just the activities that you're able to do can become more, again, like developmentally connected. So we might have played, let's say, many different improv games or creative games or even physical games with a full group of like 4 through 17 year olds. And how everyone's going to interact with that is obviously like completely different. But when you pull that back and you have a group that's 4 through 8 or 10 through 12, you can actually really select things and they can interact with things in really different ways than they could with like a wider range of development.
That's really interesting.
Mm.
The benefit of both and being able to have both.
Yeah.
In one school day. Sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk more about the nature aspect? Like, what did you do in the park system and how are you going to keep that incorporated?
Yeah. So the park system was sort of an interesting thing because, again, like the prior year, we were in 3 totally different locations. And this year we were more in one single park, though mostly separate and sometimes together in the park. So I'll speak more about this year because there are some like really unique things about certain parks we were in the year before. So the park that we were in this year was along the Wissahickon. So you had this beautiful, like lush, thick park with gorgeous trails and right next to the Wissahickon. So you've got this like stream of water and the feel of like certain like beaches or little lakes within the park. And so the things that we would do, you know, we rented two different spaces. One space was in a historic house. This is all a historic area, historic Rittenhouse, which is formerly a paper making mill that was, you know, that has been historically preserved, but used in a lot of different creative ways now. And so we rented space inside of one of those homes, which really was just like enough space to store our things and to have a bathroom. But that space had a nice little garden to meet in that it formerly called the Fairy Glen, because there had been a school in the past that used it and called it the Fairy Glen. But that was like an ideal place for the 4 through 8 year olds to meet every day and have like a group time in that area to come together to talk about the day. And then this was a huge park. And so I'll also go then to the middle group. The group that was like that middle age group was in another part of the park where there was like a park area that included benches and a covering and a fireplace, which the fireplace was all the rave, especially when it starts to get cold and like they're, you know, the fire making is a whole part of their program at that point. I found that the things that the younger ones and the ones in that middle group were attracted to doing were incredibly different. The younger group, we had lots of supplies like art materials, games, you know, balls, things like that. But in all actuality, they were much more interested in engaging with nature than they were the materials when they were out there. So they were climbing along rocks, taking all sorts of risks with their bodies that we would be like, I know that this is important and good. I know this is important and good. This is hard for me to sit here and let you do this, but I'm working on not saying be careful, but to say be mindful of your body when you're moving through the space. So there are like things that we were doing, because a lot of our model has to do with not being control based and allowing young people to find their limits. So you really kind of have to put up or shut up when you're doing that in nature. So we were out there doing that in nature. So they were rock climbing, they were digging in the sand and making rivers. They were rock collecting, they were identifying plants, because there's just like all these plants here. And I mean, everyone has a phone, and now there's so many great apps for looking to find those, you know, different things that were there. Climbing trees. I mean, they were just really interested mostly in being outside and doing the things that they could do outside. The middle group, on the other hand, were less interested in the actual nature part for most of them. There was always a small group who wanted to venture out on the very longest hike that they could take every single day. And they were doing really cool things in the water, like trying to make their own rafts and boats. And I mean, they were just loving engaging, but that was like a small group that was really interested in doing that. The rest of the group was more interested in the materials that would be brought outside that they could use. So they were playing games together. They were reading books. They were talking and hanging out and being social and being with one another, because that's what young people that age really want to do. And so even though we were outside, that's what they would do, because that's, you know, that's what was interesting to them. So that's the way nature was used.
Is there an upper group too?
Yes, there is an upper group. So the upper group, the year before, had done a full walk around the perimeter of the city, which was 100-mile walk. So every day they would pick up a different portion of that. They worked on that through the fall. It's a predetermined walk that was done by this artist in Philadelphia who was really interested in people getting to know it more. And so they took this 100-mile challenge and they did that in the fall of the year before. So this year, they were really not interested in doing a whole lot of walking. They were not interested in doing a whole lot of nature. So while we were outdoors, they were mostly in coffee shops and museums, libraries. They spent a lot of time in libraries. So they found other indoor spaces that they could go to, and they were you know, starting to do more studies and things that, you know, learning about things that they were interested in, playing games together, you know, hanging out and chilling because that's what they want to do at that age.
Sounds really fun.
Yeah.
How many students are in each group?
So each group was a little different in size, but let's say less than 20 in each group. So between 10 and 20 in each group, with the smallest group being the teen group. So I think there might've been like 11 in the teen group, and the largest group being the youngest group. And they were about 18 in all.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun. Your school sounds amazing. It sounds
Thank you. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I did want to circle back to the two staff members leaving and now like entering the next new school year, like thinking like, what's happening? How did that affect the community?
It's a really sort of interesting thing because in all honesty, there were some philosophical differences that were already there between those two staff members and the rest of the staff. And I would say to some degree, the mission of our organization. Again, like there is this complicated thing about self-directed education where you're often dealing with people who are more at the edge of a belief, right? Like, but the edge of those beliefs can be two opposite sides. And when you take Trump and the things that were going on politically in this country at that time and the year before and all that was happening politically, there was actually this bubbling difference that was there. And so, you know, with that being said, while I think it was never ethically in my mind or my co-director's mind that like, we got to get these people out, we never thought like that because I think we both take kind of walking the talk seriously around compassion and understanding and different viewpoints and respect and tolerance. I mean, we were working every muscle in order to show up to that. And it was a really real thing that not only were the beliefs outside, but the beliefs were critical of other viewpoints. So it was like, not only are you believing something so different than everybody else in this organization, including parents, if they really knew what you were talking to us about, but on top of that, you are then critical of others. And there were racial elements to that. I mean, it was just strange and I think thick and difficult and had been strange and thick and difficult. And so when there was this dividing point, it was actually a relief. It was a total relief. It got ugly. And just as an example of that, a very specific difference that was coming up was that, you know, we have a lot of non-binary youth at our center. And obviously we care about their safety and the fact that they should be able to be themselves and accepted fully wherever they are. And that it's our work to get ourselves together to show up to that, not their work to like teach us or argue with us about it. And these two staff members were the same ones who like, you know, we were doing trainings, but like the trainings were really because it was these two staff members who were consistently misgendering, who were, you know, close-minded to the fact that this was even like a real thing. Like it's not really a thing to them. And so with that being said, there were things going on, right, that were already under there. So when this was there, it was like, okay, well, you know, this is where we part. and it's okay, you know, that we're part. It's hard. It was harder for families. The staff was relieved. You know, we have this really diverse staff of people who are really progressive in their viewpoints. And the things that would even come out, you know, in trainings were just like, really difficult to process and to understand. And again, we were working with our attorneys to make sure what our policies were in terms of even things around what these people might say and how it might affect staff members, let alone young people, in terms of like anti-bullying, anti-discrimination. Like we were working hard. So when they decided that it wasn't that it wasn't the right location for them anymore, that was helpful for our whole staff and us. Families, on the other hand, because many of them had not been as exposed to these differences, it looked really different for them. And for some of them, yes, it was like offensive that more wasn't done to keep them, you know, to make it work, to find another solution, to be creative. There were people who had that belief, and we just took it and heard it and accepted what their criticism was. And eventually all of that sort of fell away, I think, and quieted, and, you know, and to give more like information, just because it's interesting, those two people ended up being essentially starting their own center with some other people who were interested. So they sort of started their own, and that's very normal in the SDE movement, because hey, a co-op doesn't take much, right? Like you can just start that. Along the way, you find out it's not as easy as you may think, especially to keep it financed and consistent and all those things. But they did actually leave. And a few months later, you know, I'm scrolling through somewhere and they're like major parts of this other SDE center that has started that I think better fits their perspective of the world.
Sounds scary, but
yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's amazing what you have to do to protect the families from what exactly is going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So interesting. Everything's so interesting. Yeah, what else? I mean, I have specific questions, but like, yeah, thinking about last year.
I think there's some things to say, just because I know my other interviews, I talked a lot about, like that very first interview, I was brand new to this work. So I was having been a teacher, and then having been a teacher coach, and then came into this essentially a nonprofit management role, but something that felt like an administrator also, because it is dealing with education and young people and families. So I was like brand new, and then the pandemic happened like within 2 weeks of me fully being in the role. So I talked a lot about like the struggles of being a co-director, and there were a lot of things that happened around race, like obviously that were happening in the world. And at the same time that was happening, we were having our own, like our original founder was essentially pushed out, and his being pushed out was happening as I was coming in. And there was some racial like discrimination, inappropriate behavior on his part that was connected to that. So like, I just kind of came into like a hot mess of everything. And so I think there is something to like, to speak back to that. So now I'm in a place where I've been in this position for 2 years, and I'm far more comfortable 2 years now than I was then. I think to some degree, because the model has had to change so much, I feel more ownership over what we're doing than I did as a person coming into something that felt somewhat fully formed. At this point, we've like taken it all apart and recreated it again, so it doesn't feel that way. Yeah, and there's been some work, even with my co-director. I worked with a leadership coach for myself for a while. I joined an organization, like a leadership organization in Philadelphia, that sort of helped frame things for me for a while. And then he and I actually did counseling together because we have a relationship with a counseling center. We're able to offer our families free therapy. And one of our staff members, who's a licensed therapist, literally was like, you know, I think you all could go work something out there. And she was right. She was right. It was a great like opening up of, you know, sort of breaking down some of those walls and becoming more vulnerable so that we can do more shared and collaborative work. Because it's really hard to do collaborative work if you're trying to protect yourself or your image in some kind of way. So I thought that would be interesting to share.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. I don't know what else. Like thinking about this next year. I mean, it makes sense that you would settle in because of 2 years of being on the job. And it would make sense that you would go to couples therapy because of the alternative educators that you are. But yeah, what's the next step, or what are you hoping for in this next year?
Yeah, in this next year, I'm hoping for, there's a lot still going on behind the scenes. Like we're dealing with having gone from like maybe 5 different funders to like 1 funder, and that funder giving us signs that like can't do all forever. And so this coming year, it's a really like dire time for us to focus on grant writing and getting more funding flowing in, which, you know, the conversation we've had off and on with funders who've tried to support us in getting more fundraising going is that, you know, a belief that the model, something about our model will need to shift in order to not to appease funders, but in order to make our numbers make sense. Because we very much are sliding scale. We have some families who pay little to nothing. And when you're looking for funders to come on board, people want to see that you're not in the red. And when you're working a model that's meant to be like giving to a community, you're automatically in the red. And it's either finding the right funders who are interested in that, or it's finding other ways to adjust what that model looks like in terms of the financial part. So we've got some like real hard work to do around that this year. And that's scary and also exciting from the perspective of, I think it gives opportunity for growth in terms of leadership, leadership skills and nonprofit management, and actually being able to learn some things that need to be learned. And we're not, you know, on our own. We have some really great help around us. And so, you know, I'm excited about that part of it. But yeah, it's also scary to know that like you're holding all that, you know? So that's kind of the big thing that's on my mind. In terms of the work with staff and working with young people and families, I feel more confident in that work than I did years past. So I'm only excited to like continue to build on that. But the big thing is staying open and funded so that we can continue to do this work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard to be something that's not a public school, that's not a charter, and that's not like a high-priced private school. All three of those things have great funding sources and have models that really work for them. And when you are something outside of that, you know, we're all on the struggle bus. This is what SDE centers go through. And there's nothing different about how what we're going to be going through, other than the fact that we had this really blessed like 5 years. We're going into our 6th year, and we had this really blessed 5 years of having some really dedicated angel donors starting off.
I wish I could just send you more
angels. Yeah, I know all the angels. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I hope this school's just like funded by the city. Mm-hmm. That'd be amazing.
It would be. It would be. And it's hard to be that, you know, and I get why we're not, you know. Once you sort of start taking funds that are connected to the city, and there are stipulations that come with that, which would be compromises on our specific model, because those models tend to be prescriptive, number one. But even if you remove that, even if somehow you make it through the gate and you're like, yeah, we're down with the creativity of this, there's still going to be something there in terms of testing or measurement that would have to be quantifiable in order to, you know, continue being funded in those specific ways, which is one of the reasons why when you're doing this kind of work, it very rarely is attached to any public funding.
You think we'd like learn by now that that's not how you measure what children or what anyone's getting out of education?
Mm-hmm.
We have 15 minutes left. Is there anything else that you wish that you had said on this recording?
Mm. No, I think that's it.
Could I ask one question that I'm just curious about? Mental health in your students, like how the pandemic, I mean, it sounds like you guys were together and outside and that, but like how have you seen a difference in the mental health of your students since the pandemic, or is everyone doing fine?
I think we've seen a difference, and I think we've seen a difference, especially on the older end. So more so that middle age group, 10 to 12, and the teens as well. I think there's definitely been a higher incidence of depression, like absolutely. And even though we've all been together, it's the entire it's the entire world of everything that's been going on these past 2 years that's so far beyond like being separate from people. Because even though we were together, there still was separation, there's still masks, there's still uncertainty, there's still the anxieties that are being experienced by their families, there's financial concerns. So yeah, I definitely think we had to have a higher incidence of depression. Our answer to that, or you know, our way of trying to support that, is the fact that we've been able to get this funding for mental health services. And so we have a relationship with a counseling center, and any family member, staff member, young person can get up to 16 free sessions. And then from there, it's a place that also already does sliding scale. And so if they were a desire to do more, then they could enroll on a sliding scale basis. And then we still haven't even used all the funds that are there. So there have been people who've used more than 16, like maybe they've gone another round of 16 if they needed it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I think so. And we're working with, you know, speaking of fundraising, that organization is 100 years old. It's this incredibly well-funded and established nonprofit. So they have their own grant writers. And so I'm working with one of their grant writers specifically on grants that would allow our segment of work to continue, but also like, yeah, if we're not around, then they don't have this work to do with us. So, you know, the funding work that we'll do together will go beyond that. So that's one of the sources of support we have in terms of fundraising. Yeah.
That's hopeful.
Yeah. 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 And it makes sense. Like, honestly, like even the location that we're in, so we're located, as I said, in Germantown, Germantown, I mean, this is Philadelphia, so I want to be like Philadelphia in general, but Germantown specifically is an area like riddled with poverty and gun violence, specifically like a lot of gun violence. And so there's funds coming into these areas in order to support growth and development. So a lot of it is like finding the right kinds of funds that are connected to education, that are connected to, you know, we do nonviolent communication, for example, as like our basis of conflict management and the ways that we work with young people. So there are things that are hopeful about who we are and how we can be like an asset to this community that will hopefully, you know, support our fundraising.
Yeah, I'm so glad you exist.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's 10 to 7. Anything else? I mean, I just want to hear more about the school, but what do you
have? Yeah.
Starting school in a few weeks.
Yeah, already working with staff. So we started meeting this week with staff and preparing, you know, we have one new staff member. We lost another staff member. Yeah. Growing and hoping to continue.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Crystal, for taking the time to do this.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Do you want to stop recording?
Yeah, I think we're good to stop.
Okay. Are you sure? Are you positive?
Positive.
All right, how are you? God, your school sounds amazing. Are you okay with me